You're now listening to Mixed Mental Arts with Brian Callen and Hunter Motz.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome you to another incredible episode of Mixed Martial Arts where ideas have sex. And Brian Callen here with Hunter Motz, of course. And I want to thank all the contributors to Mixed Martial Arts.
Mixed Mental Arts.
I'm sorry, mixedmentalarts.com. Co.
That's how you
it's
know
becoming.
You,
it's becoming yeah. such an amazing forum, mm-hmm. and the goal for me would be to truly create this idea dojo. Of course, mm-hmm. this is your idea, Hunter. And you know, we were talking not only to sort of create a place where people can come to learn, but also where we can simplify. You know, simplify big concepts and big ideas and make sense of them, you know, create a cohesive, comprehensive view of the world that you can use, that yep. has utility, and that makes sense of this ever-changing insanity around us. I think that's very important. I read that very good article by our he sounded like he had a Vietnamese name or something.
Isaiah Gulley?
No, the other guy who talked about the emperor is...
Yeah, that's Isaiah.
Isaiah, well done, Isaiah.
So Isaiah wrote this great piece. So he was in the Navy for a long time, and now he works in intelligence. But he's been, you know, struggling, as one does, with the Chinese language for a long time. Mm. And so he's going to start writing a whole series of posts that just take some Chinese proverb and relate it to what's going on in the world today.
And this was the emperor is...
Heaven is high and the emperor is far away.
Heaven is high and the emperor is far away. In other words, don't sweat the fact that you may have a politician in power that you don't like, which I have been doing a lot.
Yeah.
And it was very helpful to me. But then there's another woman who's been working for us.
Yeah.
The point is that this has been very, very moving to me and very exciting to me because Hunter took me through the website and showed me how many people from all over the world
yep.
are contributing to this idea, part of this community.
Yep.
And, you know, again, Hunter and I have never, we've made dime zero.
Negative.
Haven't made
Negative.
Dime one. Yeah, it actually cost me probably $600 a month, but who cares? The point is that we are going to try to figure out a way also, and this was Hunter's idea again, to give, to get people from other languages, great comedians in other countries and other cultures, and to create their own mixed mental arts podcast.
That's right.
So that we can create this sort of idea, again, that the best ideas win the day. Lawrence Krauss was doing Joe Rogan's podcast, and he mm-hmm. said something that was awesome, which was, you know, science, religion is fixed in a way. I mean, it's one way to look at it, but, you know, religion is, this is the story, and then we can draw from the story, but it's still something that was written 2,000 years ago that doesn't change the text. Science, when something is proven to be otherwise, the old science is scrapped. It's thrown away. And that's what's cool about that. And I think the idea of having an idea dojo
yep.
is not that all ideas aren't welcome, but certainly that some ideas, you know, again, not all ideas are equal and some ideas are better than other ideas.
And I think crucially, of course, it's great that Lawrence Krauss is saying this and he's talking about evolving your beliefs in light of the evidence. But, you know, part of the thing is that, you know, science is the most demanding belief system. It is a belief system that requires you to be constantly updating your beliefs in light of evidence. And, you know, what that really is about, it's about a path.
Mm-hmm.
Are you on a path and are you trying to figure it out or do you think that you know all the answers? And wherever you start from, I know people who are Muslims or people who are Christians who, you know, are constantly reading, constantly evolving, constantly trying to figure things out. I know people who are scientists like that. I just had this amazing podcast with Spiros Michalakis, my good buddy, and we sort of alongside, you know, Jordan Peterson and Sam Harris had their podcast about what is truth. And it ended up, I didn't set this up this way, but Spiros ended up basically making the podcast about what our understanding of truth is.
Yeah.
And our understanding of truth is because, of course, in physics, there's this idea of the theory of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Spiros was like, that's a really great piece of marketing.
Well, I read something about it where Einstein had in, toward the end of his life, was working on, there was the atomic reality, there, mm-hmm. I should say the subatomic reality, the quantum reality, mm-hmm. and there was the Newtonian reality. And he was trying to create a unifying theory.
Well, and I think this gets to some of the questions that I've been hated getting on Twitter are about, you know, I had this great podcast with Chris Ryan, and we talked a lot about ideas as tools, and that was very much what we were talking about with Spiros. And that's what ideas are. They're tools that allow you to make sense of a situation. So Spiros was talking about how, you know,
Bad. You've been very good.
No, but Andreas Christensen, who is a guy from Norway, yeah. Rupert, specifically challenged me today to not say that.
You did a good job, though.
Well, no, but
I've been counting.
No, but he said I have to do a full day of no saying you know. So
you're,
this day
you're
is
not
going to
do it. You're not so going to do it, brother.
No, I can do it.
Let's see if you can do a podcast. You got to start small, man.
Okay.
Start small, brother.
Size chunks. Okay, so from here on, we start the clock, and maybe the day starts at this time.
Right now.
Okay. There are different models that we use for different making sense of different situations.
Yeah.
A model is just a story. So I have a set of beliefs about this group of people. I have Spiros is trying to figure out a set of beliefs that would cut underneath quantum field theory and general relativity and make sense of that deeper level of reality. But just because Spiros figures that out, it doesn't mean that suddenly chemistry becomes obsolete. Those are useful tools for making sense of things at the level of chemistry. And then there are other tools and other stories that are useful for making sense of biological organisms, doctors. It's not like all of medicine now becomes irrelevant.
Well, I'm sorry to piggyback on this, but we do this all the time in our culture. Mm-hmm. So, and I think, I don't know if I touched on this last podcast, but one of the things that drives me absolutely crazy is when people simplify the complex human being, this infinitely complex organism. They utter one or two sentences, and they are labeled a racist, homophobe, a xenophobe, a right winger, a Nazi, Nazi sympathizer, and we dismiss that human being. And I'll tell you, I'm no fan of Trump. Mm-hmm. I spent some time researching Breitbart. And I think Andrew Breitbart before he died, and Steve Bannon. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to the media representation of both those guys, boy oh boy, can you walk away thinking that this guy, these guys are, they hate everybody but white Americans and all that. And it's just bullshit. It's a ridiculous way to characterize a guy like Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon was a naval officer, Harvard Business School guy, Goldman Sachs alum, and by the way, also was the ran Breitbart News. Now, I haven't read a lot about Breitbart News. I listened to some interviews with Andrew Breitbart, who was a firebrand, and I don't think he was a racist. I think his news outlet attracted a lot of people. But the point I'm making in a long-winded way is that you better be careful who's telling you what about that person, because you can paint a picture with the right clips and playing it over and over. And that's why a lot of the media has lost their credibility. Mm-hmm. Shame on them. They do bear some responsibility for the fact that a lot of people just can't trust the media. And, this is why you have a lot of people out there. And Sam Harris was talking about this not him, but Anna Applebaum. On her podcast with Sam Harris, he's been exploring this Putin connection. And she was saying that, nowadays you've got to be very careful because certain media outlets, including propaganda outlets, will float 15 different stories. And they're simple stories with a good guy and a bad guy. Mm-hmm. And what happens is people go, oh, there's so many different explanations. We'll never know what the truth is. And, I'm kind of piggybacking on this idea that you've got to be careful not to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Well, and crucially, this comes down to a very problematic idea, which is identity. The very idea of identity is deeply problematic. So how long have you and your wife been married?
Almost 10 years.
Okay. Would you say that you know everything about her?
No.
No.
So no, thank God.
Yeah, thank God.
Quick side note, you better keep mystery in your relationship.
Yeah.
The Europeans know that, mm-hmm. and I know that too. I don't want to know everything about you, and here's another fucking thing to keep in mind. If you think you need to 100% trust your spouse, you want to get bored? Nah. There should always be a little danger in the air, so kiss my ass with all that stuff too. Keep going.
So, But I think that's the key thing. So if you don't even fully know your spouse,
yeah.
who you've been as close with as any two human beings can be close for 10 years, then what really makes us think that we know anybody? Everybody is just a projection in our mind. It's a story that we tell about someone. But the crucial thing is, and this is, you know, I think where, you know, Jordan Peterson and what we talked about with him is so important, is that, you know, because Jordan, we had this great podcast with Jordan, and we mostly talked about all that social justice warrior stuff. But then at the end, we got into this very interesting thing about archetypes.
Yes.
And
which he, by the way, he and Sam Harris got deep into on their second podcast together. And which, it was a great podcast.
It was a great podcast.
Yeah, I really liked it.
But crucially, the archetypes, the point is that the hero has 1,000 faces. So there are many sides to Brian Callen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's worthy of, you know, at least a 10-volume biography to sort of really unpack the mysteries of Brian Callen or any individual.
Well, because I vary from day to day.
Of course.
I mean, you know, I'm a sinner and I'm a saint some days and I'm a thief. And you know, I mean.
And sometimes you are taken over with lust and vengeance and pride
and
humility. And charity.
Yes.
There are all
and racist thoughts and murderous thoughts and all those and mad thoughts. And yes. But, you know, at the core of who I am, I you know, yeah, I'm a good guy, right? I mean,
in other words,
what I mean is that at the core, I'm not going to steal from you. If I did steal from somebody, and I haven't, but if I did steal from somebody, I'd feel badly about it. I'd have to figure out a way to do something about that, right?
Well,
one of the great
universals of humanity is that pretty much everybody at their core thinks they're a good guy. Like, I saw this amazing...
Well, that's true.
Yeah, I saw this amazing...
I haven't been tested, really, right?
At some point, I saw some sort of clip from some sort of reality show. I don't know how it floated up. But it was some deal where they basically had... There was a contestant, and they had a series of damning secrets about the person. And you would either bet to have those secrets revealed or not revealed.
Jesus.
And so it's this woman, and her whole family is sitting there in the chairs right in front. And, you know, she has to decide, you know, do you reveal the thing? And so she reveals, her husband asks, are you still in love with your ex? And, you know, that she's hooked up to a lie detector and she says, yes, I am, right? And so then the level of money goes up.
Good God.
And then it's like, have you slept with anyone since we've been married other than me?
Don't ask that question.
And then, you know, she says, yes, and the money still goes up. And then, you know, it becomes clear that in earlier ones, they've revealed that she's stolen, she's done all these other things. And then the final round, they ask her, do you believe that you're a good person? And she says, yes, I do.
But
the amazing thing is that then the lie detector says that she's lying. That somewhere deep down, she doesn't really believe that. And how reliable is a polygraph? How reliable is a lie detector? Who the heck knows?
No, but you know, it's like in the Screwtape Letters. C.S. Lewis says, the inner markings, no one can really tell what the inner markings of a man are except for that man.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that most of us are going to see where I falter or where I am careful is mm-hmm. I do know one thing about myself. I think I naturally have always had a great deal of compassion for people. I think I have the imagination to understand what it's like to suffer. I really do.
Brian, I'm just going to clear this up for our listeners.
Yes.
There is no doubt that Brian Callen is one of the more compassionate individuals I know, to his own detriment.
Well, that's true.
He routinely gives money to, you know, murderers.
I have a lot of problems with that. I do. I'd be the worst cop in the world. And it's true. I'm a complete
but the most
pussy,
loved but, cop.
Well, probably. Yeah, and so but first, yes, I think I have that's been my mother. I get it from my mother.
Yeah.
And I get it from my father. They're both incredibly generous people with soft hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God I've gotten a lot of benefit from that. But then the question comes, what happens if I had to, like the gentleman who wrote The Killing Fields, we had him on the podcast, and for that matter, Jared Diamond, what happens if I don't have access to water? And that group over there does, and my child needs that water. This is a hard case, of course, but it's going to make me less than charitable.
Yeah,
right.
Hunger is a powerful force. Thirst is a powerful force.
But the truth is that I'll still feel bad about it.
I think that's the thing. I think if it really got desperate, if it really got down to the wire, we get into a Walking Dead scenario.
Yeah.
I think your mind becomes very clear that it's us or them.
Yeah, and that's a terrible place to be. But yeah,
who live there.
Yeah, it was like one of the things that really moved me was, who was the guy who wrote all those great children's stories, where the wild things are?
Maurice Sendak.
Yeah, and Maurice Sendak was obviously an incredibly compassionate, beautiful human being. And they said, "Do you believe in God?" And he says, "No, the war took care of that for me. I don't believe in God at all." And I remember just realizing that that's somebody who is obviously a very good person and had all of his ideas of, you know, almost like, I'm a good person, but it doesn't matter. I'll be a good person, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. I'm just a good person because I'm a good person.
Yeah,
its own sake, but I'm not going to get anything for it. And it made me really.
But I think, you know, for example, when we look back at history, it's so easy to judge people from, say, the 1500s or the 6th century or 2000 BC. But they dealt with those things. They dealt with hunger and they dealt with starvation and they didn't live in stable societies with well-functioning governments. And they faced those threats. And so,
well, you know what they had? A deep belief in religion, because they didn't have the scientific method for the most part. They weren't, quote unquote, what we'd call educated. And crucially,
I think that faith got them through. And often that faith was there to solve problems. So
it unified their minds and their practices and their
helped them overcome
system.
Tribalism.
That's right.
I mean, that was Muhammad's great achievement, was that he unified the warring tribes.
That's right.
Now, we had Peter Turchin on. I think you might not have been there for that one. But Peter Turchin wrote this book, Ultra Society, which is all about how humanity has tended towards larger and larger units of organization over time. So there's been this coming together of, you know, you move from city-states to nations to, you know, these massive religions like Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, and we're now in the process of sort of forging a global society. And the question is, how exactly will that work? Will that all be arranged? But these coming together of these larger and larger confederations, a lot of that has been brought about by religion. And, you know, we stand on the shoulders of that. So part of what happened in the Jordan Peterson, Sam Harris podcast is that Jordan Peterson is saying that science owes a debt to religion, mm-hmm. and that science would not have been able to develop and evolve if it wasn't for the level of stability and organization that religion brought. And, you know, he even goes further and says that many of the Christian notions of truth are vital to the evolution of the scientific mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we do stand on the shoulders of giants, and that line of giants goes all the way back to the Stone Age. If you don't have guys building stone tools, you don't get bronze tools and you don't get iron tools.
Yeah.
And so it's been one long line of progression. Now, obviously, it's not one upward line. There's backs and forths and, you know, ups and downs.
Every time I hear that, I just find my mind wandering to, where are we going?
Well, that is the great question.
There is an alpha and an omega.
Yep.
It does seem there is an end to the line.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sci-fi guys to talk about meshing with machines,
uh-huh.
and people like Ray Kurzweil talk about sort of that singularity where we all become connected through this neural net,
and that's one
with
vision.
Access to all the information,
and that's one vision. And we're, you know, humanity, everybody, all 7 billion of us, going to vote in deciding how that pans out. But what I will tell you, Brian, which I think is very interesting, is this book "Why Information Grows" by Cesar Hidalgo. And this is part of what I ended up talking about with Spiros. And so there's Spiros and I talked about Spiros's boss at Caltech, who's one of the great physicists of our time. He talked about two trick ponies, that the really remarkable individuals are the people who can sit comfortably in multiple worlds because they have the ability to bridge those worlds and to move ideas across them. And so, of course, I said to
that's
Spiros,
what mixed martial arts, yeah, mixed
exactly.
martial arts is.
Said, yeah. So what you're saying is that your boss is talking about mixed mental artists.
Yeah.
And, you know, the ultimate goal is to become not just a two trick pony, but a many, many, many trick pony. And, you know, that would be a unicorn.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I want to give a shout out to our very own unicorn, Matt Madonna, Who has been very active in helping to build the t-shirt store and doing all this stuff. Matt and I had never talked before, and then he just reached out on Twitter, and now we're connecting. So thank you, Unicorn. This is the shout-out I should have given you on the last podcast.
Yeah. This podcast is going to be some of that, too. We're going to also talk about a little bit, but keep finishing your
– Yeah. So, and the other shout-out I should give while I'm still talking about this is there's a guy on Twitter named Backus, and his son Max has become a big fan of the Straight A Conspiracy.
Awesome.
And Backus asked me to give a shout out to Max. So Max, you know, study hard, do well in school, and you know, make your education your own. Make school work for you.
Great.
But there is this progression that is happening, and you know, so this book by Cesar Hidalgo. Hidalgo is a two-trick pony, at least. And he's an economist, but he's also a physicist. Jesus. And so he's been connecting these two worlds together. And he says it's clear that there is a growing of order. So we often have these notions of chaos where we think that the universe sort of tends towards chaos. But if you actually look what's happened with human societies. They get more and more and more ordered. They get more and more and more complex. Machines get more and more complex. So there is this increasing complexity in the universe. Now, the interesting thing is that complexity comes at a tension with chaos. So there's a tension between order and chaos. So you take in food, that food is fairly ordered, but then your body breaks it down and releases heat. And that heat disorders the universe. But at the same time, you're using the energy from that food to order the molecules in your body and to build your body and to make a more ordered body. Mm-hmm. So that's the fascinating thing, is there's this tension between order and chaos. But as Hidalgo says...
Well, or you know, you can take in too many or too much food.
Yeah.
And it creates disorder in your body, right? And so that's kind of like where I was... going with the idea of creating a neural net, if we had access to all the information and could download it, it doesn't mean we get closer to the truth. We have access to all the information now. And in fact, you know, the truth doesn't even seem to matter, at least not in the political sphere. Well, so the trick becomes, how do you separate the wheat from the chaff? I guess that's always been the case.
That has always been the case, and that is the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah,
and
which is where mixed mental arts comes in.
And that's the, you know, for my experience growing up, and since your experience growing up was so similar to mine as a fellow cultural mutt moving between
worlds. I was a C student, and you excelled. Keep going. But I got laid a lot. What?
Yeah, that is true, Brian. But see, you had a lot of sex.
Yeah.
You were well loved.
And I was a good athlete, wasn't I, Hunter? I was a good athlete.
You were a good athlete. I had none of those
things. And we're going to get into why I was a good athlete.
Oh, yeah, we are.
Because this is going to be fun, but keep going.
But so as there is this progression, and I think the challenge is that, you know, societies, in terms of these smaller and smaller tribes building to larger and larger tribes, is that, you know, these societies very often have to fall apart to make a way for a new and better society. And Ibn Khaldun, the great Arab historian, talked about asabiyya. And asabiyya is that social glue that holds a society together. And so there was a post-World War II order that sort of held the world together, and it was dominated by the United States. And in many ways, that asabiyya, those sort of old intuitions, are falling apart.
They seem to be.
Yeah. And I think that if we
don't... And I think primarily because people are looking for someone to blame for their dreams not coming true.
That's right.
You know?
And so what you have to do is, you know, that opens the space for things like ISIS, where you get competing alternatives coming in. And what we have to do is...
Well, or dictatorships.
Or dictatorships or any of those things. Yeah. People crave order. And that's one of those human desires. And so what we have to do is, if we can rally the wisdom of crowds and we can rally, you know, people all over the world, we can build a clearer and, you know, better vision of the world and how we progress societies and how we evolve.
Because we're creating a civil arena,
mm-hmm.
for ideas to compete.
That's right.
More importantly, I think it's very important also when you say compete, we're not looking for winners or losers necessarily. What we're looking for is to explore all the ideas. And, you know, without even having to say it, the best ideas are going to find their way. You know, when you hear a great idea, it makes sense. It just finds its – it seems
and
to find its own
sense?
Way.
Why does it make
well,
sense?
Well, I think it resonates with – something that is useful to you.
Yeah.
And that's probably not even the best way to do it, but I think it resonates with...
It speaks to something in our shared humanity.
Yeah, like, you know, that's kind of where the Jordan Peterson thing came in. Mm-hmm. When he said that, it clicked with me. You know, he got, you know, J.K. Rowling got the prototypes right. And so we kind of found ourselves moving in that direction. We all recognize those stories. Even children do. What's that tell you? I mean, it's what I always say about music. You know, when I'm listening to Andra Day sing Rise Up, you know, some days I'm driving in traffic and I'm like, we need a biblical flood to wash this bullshit. You know, I can't stand it. LA needs literally 7 million less people. I'm in fucking traffic. And then Andra Day comes on with Rise Up and I'm literally like, even terrorists have mothers. Why can't we hug each other? I love everyone and I feel so overwhelmingly generous. And then I have to pee, you know, and eat. But, you know, But you know what I'm saying?
That's the human experience. That's why identity is such a ridiculous concept.
It is.
Because we are so many different people on so many different days and in every moment of the day. And that is that idea that every hero has 1,000 faces.
Yeah.
And, you know, we tell stories about each other, but I tell one story. I've told some stories about Sam Harris and Richard Dawkins and Tom Woods and,
sure,
you know, Lena Dunham. I could tell other stories. Yeah. I could tell great stories about how awesome they are.
Yeah.
I could do that all day long if you want.
Yes.
But the real thing is that none of this ever really comes down to, you know, Brian Callen or Hunter Motz or any of these things. What we're setting up to compete here is the ideas. What are the best, and that's what science is really about, is what are the best stories, the best models for making sense of the facts and reality? And by the way, you're not just going to have one. There's not going to be a theory of everything. There's going to be theories of everything. And they'll be useful for different things. So there's a whole, you know, if you've got a car mechanic, they have a way of looking at things and way of parsing out situations and making sense of things that will be totally unaffected by whatever Spiros does. Spiros is going to do his thing, and it is going to solve a bunch of problems. It'll help make quantum computers, and it'll help make better, you know, machines in all sorts of ways, and it may ultimately feed into how you make a better car. But on an everyday level, you know, it's not that I'm going to suddenly, you know, start to think about how to make a steak in a fundamentally different way. There's lots and lots of these different stories and models that will still be the same. And our job with Mixed Mental Arts is to find what are those rules of thumb that people are using, you know, these things like the Dunbar number and the growth mindset and...
Honor cultures versus dignity cultures.
And, thinking yeah. fast and slow, atomism and holism,
yeah.
optimism.
All the things we have. By the way, we're going to make these videos.
Yep.
Tell
culture
them about the
matters. So together with, again, you know, so Katie O'Brien, who I've known for a long time, and then a lot of people that I've only come to know in the last few months, Kate Fogarty, who's writing these awesome, you know, 500-word summaries of all of these different concepts, these knowledge bombs, and then Dave Colon, who's at Second City, Andrew Hunt, who I did stand-up with ages ago, and then he saw me on Rogan and reached out and was like, dude, this is awesome. This is what I've been saying for ages. Like, how do we get these ideas out there? Mm-hmm. You know, Jason Frankovitz, who works in TV and is going to help us produce all these segments. And then we've got a team of editors who have volunteered from all around the country. So we can shoot the footage here in Los Angeles, share it with them, and then they'll edit it together. And these guys all have jobs. They all have to pay their bills. They all have families. But they're all coming together to chip in all sorts of different ways. Mm. And so we're going to have a series of 15 videos that are 2 to 3 minutes and that will teach you in whatever that ends up being, half an hour to 45 minutes, everything that we have figured out through the Brian Callen show. And we'll sum it all up.
That's fantastic.
And then,
I'm excited about that education.
Yep.
So I can drop it.
Well,
those knowledge bombs.
Exactly. And you can drop those knowledge bombs all over social media, and you can drop it all over conversations everywhere.
Well, boy, do we need it.
Yep.
Boy, do we need it. I mean, this president, I do think we should restructure the tax code, and I do think there's an intelligent way to go about immigration enforcement, and maybe there are a lot of good points to this. Yeah. Not a lot, maybe. I mean, I don't know, but I mean, I don't want to. I don't want to be prejudicial here, but
see, here's what I have to say to that, Brian.
Yeah,
天高皇帝远。
which is
the emperor. The heaven is high and the emperor is far away.
That's I like that you just know that in fucking Chinese, dude. God damn
by
it.
The way, our longtime buddy Abdel Beaud, after we spoke French
Abdel,
on the podcast,
love Abdel Beaud. Yeah, he goes, dude. Hunter does not speak French fluently, and either do you. French is my first language, and you guys butchered it.
And he said it sounded like two deaf people trying to speak French.
He was awesome. Abdel Bayoud is always sending me the most awesome shit. I love that guy. But I can't wait to meet him.
He's probably
listening to this because he lives in Toronto. He's like a venture capitalist. He skydives, he's a hedge fund guy, but he's a good guy.
Yeah.
He's Algerian.
He's Algerian.
So he went through. He had some of the experience of the Civil War, and yep. I mean, you know,
he very much gets that culture matters.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but he's a Trump supporter. Abdel, come on, the fuck.
Well, and you know, and there, I've gotten plenty of messages from people who are Trump supporters who are like, give him a chance, give him a chance.
I don't mind if you're anti-Hillary. I get that 100%.
Yeah.
And pro, you know, right-wing ideas. I like a lot of the right's ideas, but that guy is a Trumpist.
It bothers you. But
I fucking hate him, man.
But
I mean, there's very few people. I just, as a person, I read this Time magazine interview with him. It was so chaotic. He doesn't even know how to string a sentence together, and I'm being serious. I mean, I've never been afraid for my country, ever, and I am. I know the emperor, the heaven is high, and the emperor is far away, but
Brian, let me ask you this. So,
I mean, I want to beat him up.
Let's imagine this. Yeah. What do we need Donald Trump's permission to create a culture where everybody embraces mistakes?
He's a gift.
Yes, he is.
And I'll tell you why he's a gift. I think that he has compounded why this podcast is important and why so many other podcasts are important. I've been listening to Sam Harris's podcast, who's got a huge axe to grind with Donald Trump, and he's got so many smart conservative thinkers on there, not just liberal thinkers who are so articulate about why we should be worried. Et cetera, et cetera. So Donald Trump has been a gift. It's opened my mind. It's energized me. It's gotten me to not be complacent, because that's my go-to. That's my default, is to go, things are okay, which is another way of putting your head in the sand.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, I have been bothered. I have allowed the itch to fester, and I've been trying to do something. And I think he's done that to a lot of people in this country.
And I think that's important, because fundamentally it is a moment where we realize that whether you're looking to left or you're looking to right, you're not going to get the leadership you need for this moment. The world is changing so dramatically that it is really going to take the wisdom of crowds to solve these problems. And
well, or maybe rethinking a lot of things for ourselves, or
that's
kind
the wisdom of crowds.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's so much to be optimistic about, you know, in a lot of ways. I guess my biggest worry is really the idea of how credible journalism is being discredited.
Well,
and that's what I worry about.
But I think at the same time, the point is that the tools exist. It's not we can do this podcast, other people can do these podcasts. There's no reason why, and that's part of what I'm excited about. Brian is now trying to fish something out of his wine glass.
I'm trying to fish a fly out of my wine glass. Keep talking.
But we have the tools and the technology. So the heaven is high and the emperor is far away.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, there's nothing to stop us from building a platform that allows people to educate themselves, allows them to inform themselves. We can reach out to stand-up comedians all over the world and help them set up podcasts that put all of these ideas into other languages. We can build a community. We can build the Caliphate, Brian.
Yeah.
We can really build it. And
you know, we don't have to call it the Caliphate, but yes.
Every movement,
I'm not worthy, but yeah.
Every movement needs a figurehead, and you know, you...
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, I just said, you know, look at that.
Cut to me being, you know, well, you know what? Forget Trump, Callan. Just don't... Don't dig too deeply into my closet.
But I think
I'm not even, you know, he's...
But that's the advantage, I think, of you and me, is that our skeletons are very obvious now. So yeah. we the great thing is there's a freedom that comes from that, where you can no longer try and put on airs or pretend that you are some perfect individual. You know, I had my weird Twitter storm. You can find all sorts of stupid things I did in college. I mean, really, it will take some very light Googling. I was on a reality show, Brian. Like, this is something we haven't even really talked about on this podcast. But the level and the number of stupid things that I have done, it's just liberating, because at this point I no longer have to pretend that I have all the answers or that I'm smart. I can just admit that I'm just an idiot who's read some books.
Well, you're far from an idiot, but I know what you mean. There's something liberating about kind of thinking of yourself as a work in progress and as somebody who is always willing to change their mind.
Yeah.
You know, you should have core principles, you know, and
be willing to change those and fundamentally realize that the whole point of always be ready to put the white belt back on.
That's better. That's a better way to look at it.
Yeah. Which, by the way, also I stole from my Muay Thai kickboxing teacher.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, you're saying, oh, this was all my idea. Where did I get mixed mental arts from? It was a small leap from mixed martial arts.
Doesn't matter. Most things are small leaps, but they catch on.
And that's the key thing is that's all that innovation is about. It's taking what already exists and putting it together in new ways. It's idea sex.
That's right.
And so our job is to package those raw materials and make it easier and easier for the wisdom of crowds to run with those ideas and idea sex them. And the more more idea sex we can get going on in the world, the more we will find solutions to these problems.
Well, I've been thinking that we should start reading books again and discussing those books.
I think that's
a great
idea.
Because I think we should take maybe this podcast as well to go through what sort of an outline of the videos we're going to make to refresh everybody on all the subjects we've talked about.
Do you think that's a good idea to do that right now? Brilliant.
Why don't you get your computer? Otherwise, I'm going to go into the fact that I did my genome and that I'm I'm basically half Italian and basically half Irish. What I thought I was, I thought I had some Jewish in me. I have zero Ashkenazi Jew, and I have some Iberian. I think I'm 5% Iberian or 5% Eastern European and 3% Iberian, which is why I've always been drawn to the Iberian culture and the Iberian Peninsula, if there is such a thing. Either way, the most important thing that everybody needs to know about my genome is, well, one is I'm not predisposed to any kind of diseases, so I'm never going to die. Second of all, I'm a light sleeper. Third of all, my genome is likely to desire and consume more caffeine, which I sure as hell do. Third, I got a huge piece, and that was I buried way in the thing. But the most important is the fact that I'm primarily fast twitch muscle, which has been the greatest. I was always kind of would rely on my speed in sport, and I always thought I was sort of somehow pulling it off despite the fact that I was made for marathons. Well, no, I'm not made for endurance sports. In fact, I'm made for what they consider to be sprinting and power sports. So the bottom line is I am a black man in a white man's body.
Wow.
Well, I'm a white man and a black. I don't know how that goes.
But the point is, you want to be black.
Well, yes. My friend Brandon Schaub said, I could have told you were fast twitch muscle because you've got that high, tight rump and your quads are. And he basically said, you look like a frog. He called me a human frog.
I mean,
I can't believe I'm going into this right now.
But I think what's important, Brian,
I'm going to tie it back into what we've been talking about.
Well, I'm really excited for this segue because it's going to be a masterpiece.
So here I am all excited about the fact that I'm fast twitch muscle. So I can talk about that. I've told literally everybody. I've told everybody. I mean, people I don't even know. I told the guy who came to install an alarm system in my house today. And he looked at me like, okay. And so I'm a pathetic human being, but what I want to bring this around to why I'm bringing it up, I saw my genome, I saw everything about like my ancestry and all that stuff, and I don't know myself any better, and it really had no relevance on who I am as a person, and it actually told me very little about Brian Callen, which is interesting because, you know, you can, it's almost like looking at statistics to kind of describe a human being or describe a culture or to describe, you know, a truth. You can look at all these stats on my genome, and boy, we paid extra to see all the different stuff, whether how much Cro-Magnon or Neanderthal I had, all that shit. And again, it would shed really very little light on who I am as a person. I mean, you know, it's essentially useless information. I guess it would be useful if you were predisposed to some diseases, but.
And actually, that is a brilliant segue, Brian.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you why, because the big point of all of this is that your genes don't really determine your success or how you do, but your cultural software makes a huge, huge difference.
Yes.
And all humans have the ability to upload cultural software, but the question is, what did we pick up from our moms and dads? What did we pick up from our communities? And how has our job shaped our cultural software? And that is really the point of these Culture Matters videos, is to really take people through that so they have a framework for understanding them. So if you want, we can right now share with the world the outline of these videos.
Yeah, let's do that, because what we're going to do after this, our podcast should start to be, again, centered around maybe some ideas, new books, and kind of bring to light either, you know, different perspectives on the same ideas we've been talking about or some new ideas. And
well, and the other thing
that, feel about that,
well, but the other thing that there's been really a demand for is to sort of work through, have, you know, a full on book club, right? So Bropra's book club, and we work through what are the core books and just break them down for people and give people the ability to make sense of them.
That's a good
so
idea.
We could also work through those books, even either in a chunk of books at a time or one book at a time, and, you know, tell us what you guys want. I mean, that's the point. We're here to serve you. So let us know. And then we could do that and then get the author back on.
There you go.
And do something like that as well.
Because
I think part of what I think is important is that, yes, we want to constantly be expanding and adding new ideas, but we really want to shore up that sort of core worldview, because that's the thing that then gives you a framework to be able to make sense of and interpret new ideas.
Yep. So why don't you go ahead.
Take us through these videos.
Take us through the videos we're going to do and the things that we've kind of learned in the past 200 episodes. And this is not going to take as long as you think it is, guys.
Yeah. So, and that's the amazing thing is that there's a very few core ideas that you get out of 200 episodes and reading all those books.
Right.
So the first thing is that you have a culture. Everybody has a culture. And Nate McCabe, who is going to be working on the belt system from France, has this, you know, has been using the Matrix as the analogy, where, you know, obviously from the movie The Matrix, you're born, you were looking around, you think you see things as they really are, but there's this Matrix and it's creating this illusion. And that illusion is culture. It binds and blinds, it gives you cultural biases so that you interpret things in a certain way without even realizing that the world is being filtered through that lens. Mm-hmm. And what we're offering you is the red pill. This is your opportunity to leave your culture and to become aware of your cultural software, and then you can be deliberate in choosing to rewrite and update your cultural software to learn, unlearn, and relearn. It's also worth noting, by the way, that the men's right activists and the alt-right have been using this metaphor of the Matrix and the red pill.
Oh, boy.
It's such a good metaphor, we're going to steal it from them.
Okay.
All right. We're going to culturally reappropriate that.
Yep.
Anyway, but this is a thing that we all know happens to us. You know, people say things like, oh, I'm turning into my mother, or, oh, I sound just like my father. And that's because you have picked up those beliefs and values from them. Mm-hmm. But it's a much, much larger phenomenon than just from your immediate parents. It's from, you know, America or Russia or China or wherever it is. So the second one is that culture is shaped to your environment.
Okay.
And that's just evolution. But there are some great examples of that. One of the examples that we're planning to use in the video is Polish versus Hawaiian. So the Polish language is heavy on consonants, and Hawaiian is these big open sounds. Brian, I didn't know you spoke Hawaiian. It's like Israel came back. By the way, your Hawaiian sounds.
You have to have
Ethiopian.
A deep voice, I know. Oh, no, no, I'm one way. You can know it
now. Okay, now it's just Ladysmith.
Now it sounds really Arabic.
Yeah.
I mean, not Arabic. It sounds super Nigerian, super African.
So, but Hawaiian, yeah, is aloha, right? Yep. Mahalo. It's these big open sounds. And Polish is przepraszam. It's all consonants. Yeah.
That's what oppression and blitzkrieg does to you. The poor Poles, well, they suffered a lot.
It's actually what weather does to you.
Yes, it
does.
So,
because if it's cold, then you're indoors and you're speaking at small distances. And so you can have a language that is przepraszam. So sweet hutch, right? Oh, it's all ch-ch-ch-ch-ch.
Maybe because you're close and you don't want to be talking in your face.
Like that.
So you catch everybody's germs.
Exactly.
You know, keep your mouth closed. It's so fucking interesting. As you learn about culture, you realize that you know what the value, can I just say this? The value of reading, the value of learning culture is that it allows you to, the way you share in each other's humanity is great novels show you essentially what it is to be a woman, a disabled person, a killer, a healer, a nun. I mean, you know, you get that perspective, don't you?
You get to walk in other
people's
shoes.
And when you learn culture, about culture, you realize that if I had grown up in a cold climate or on an island, I would have spoken that way too.
Yep.
Because that would have made sense, because that would have allowed me the best chance of survival, maybe even fulfillment. And so it makes you more compassionate. It
because
makes
you realize that there, but for the grace of God, go
it
on.
It makes you humble.
Yeah.
It just does, man. It's kind of like when you talk to fighters or soldiers, like real badass soldiers, they tend to be pretty humble and they never talk macho because they've seen firsthand just exactly how vulnerable even the toughest son of a bitch is.
Yep.
Everybody gets dropped. Everybody gets killed. Everybody falls.
Well, and the key thing is, where does humility come from? The word humility comes from humus, soil, earth. Mm. So it's actually from the Latin word for being grounded. Mm. And nothing is more grounding than the experience of war.
Fuck.
So Hawaiian, on the other hand, is spoken outdoors. And so, you know, it's because of the weather. People are outdoors a lot. The wind is blowing. And so you need a language that is aloha mahalo. And, you know, because that carries over distances much better. Mm-hmm. And so in Joe Henrich's book, The Secret of Our Success, you know, you can predict the sonority of a language, basically how valley or how consonant heavy it is, based on these four factors, but two of them are weather and wind speed, which is pretty amazing.
God damn.
But the even more extreme example of that I absolutely adore is Silbo Gomero. So on the Canary Islands, because very often people are being shepherds and they're up on the hills and they want to communicate with people way down in the, you know, by the sea, they have a language that is entirely based on whistles. And so every single sound in Spanish has a corresponding whistle. And so they can whistle out full sentences like, I'm going to be home at 6 p.m. Be sure to make my favorite dish. Wait, do we have any wine?
In whistling?
In whistling. They can whistle out.
Is this
out
in The Secret of Our Success?
No, it's but if you look online.
I was like, I missed that chapter.
Yeah, if you look online, just look up Silbo Gomero, S-I-L-B-O. G-O-N-E-R-O.
Dude, I remember this is a dropping knowledge.
Oh, it's an amazing
kid.
Dropping knowledge.
That's good.
But you can watch people whistling these languages.
Silbo Gomero.
Yeah,
okay.
And there's a series of whistled languages around the world, but Silbo Gomero is the most elaborate, the one that is the most complex.
Okay.
But so, yeah, you know, that's, people have adapted these languages, and it's not that anybody sits there and is sort of planning this thing out. It just adapts over time to the language and evolves to fit that environment.
Okay.
Other examples include, of course, clothing, right? Obviously, people dress different ways in the world, and that is suited to the environment. You know, you don't want to go around, again, I said, you know, damn it. I'm really,
okay, you're doing well, you're doing well, you're doing well.
You know, comparatively,
you're doing
baby
well.
Steps. But cuisine is also, there's that great thing in The Secret of Our Success about spice. So with hotter climates, the food is spicier, and it turns out that's because the spices are antimicrobial. And specifically, you find they did an analysis of all these recipes from all over the world, and you can, basically, if you have a place like India or Mexico, they're combining all these spices in a way to maximize the antimicrobial properties. Whereas if you go to places like Norway and Sweden, they have these very bland foods.
That's interesting.
Because they don't need the same antimicrobial properties. So culture is highly adapted to these environments and has evolved over a very, very long time to serve a particular practical function. And what ends up happening is, very often we don't understand why that culture evolved. And so what ends up, we screw it up without even realizing it. So there's that great example of corn and wood ash, right? Mm-hmm. Nixtamalization. So the Aztecs would take their corn and they would mix in wood ash.
Yep.
And so then along come the Europeans. They're like
we don't need this wood ash.
Woodish stuff. And they spread corn all over Europe. And they get these massive, this new disease springs up, pellagra.
Yeah.
And for hundreds of years, they can't figure out what pellagra is. And then they realize that it's a niacin deficiency. It's a vitamin B deficiency. And that the wood ash was basically creating an alkaline environment that released the niacin and made it available to the body. Now, did the Aztecs know about vitamins?
No.
Or vitamins? No, they did not.
Somebody told them.
Well, it just evolved, that understanding.
Yeah.
And very often, there's the other example is sort of cassava and cyanide.
Cassava. You got to treat it a certain way or you can die.
And what happened was, again, the Europeans spread cassava across Africa without the technique for washing and preparing it. But now, of its own accord, the wisdom of crowds, that technique is re-evolving.
Right.
And that is the amazing property of the wisdom of crowds. And then, of course, from Joe Henrich's own work, the Fijian fish taboos,
right,
where women have taboos around certain kinds of fish when they're pregnant, and it turns out to be, oh, wait, surprise, the exact types of fish that cause ciguatera poisoning.
Yep.
So this culture, that's video number two. Video number three, when you shift your environment, your cultural software doesn't work anymore. And so that's the experience of all these explorers where, you know, you had these, and you, you.
Well, it's basically, you know, look, we have a culture that works for Los Angeles in 2017. The culture that we have would not work in the Arctic, would not work in the Sahara, would not work in the Amazon. That's all you need to know.
In fact, it wouldn't even work in a different industry.
That's right.
And I've had that experience where there's a certain way that you behave in tutoring or podcasting,
yeah,
and then you go into a corporate environment and suddenly you're like, oh, this isn't okay.
That's right. You've got to be able to change your culture, borrow from other cultures.
That's right.
All right. What's the next one?
And so the next one is, how is culture transmitted? And it's through this blind copying. You think someone's super cool. You want to be around them. You hang around them. You start dressing the same way. You do your hair the same way. And you copy from the outside in.
And so, some of it's very useful and some of it's not so useful, because that's what we do. We blindly copy. It's like in Papua New Guinea, when they saw people flying planes, they built a tower, they built a plane, but they didn't know anything about aerodynamics, of course. And they were like, how come this isn't working? Well, we're just copying, you know, what we saw, but we didn't.
Well, and they started superficially. They started with the shape,
yeah,
the shape of the plane.
Yeah.
And then they didn't manage to work into, oh, there's an engine. There's
sure
all sorts of things inside there.
Sure.
Or the more recent example that I think is amazing from your own life is your wife and Danish culture,
oh, yeah,
where she has been blindly obsessed with Danish culture and has been trying to make everything hygge.
Yeah. Hygge.
But there is this, she's in that love affair phase of just thinking that it's the most awesome. And, you know, she made this great joke where she's like, there may be things that are not perfect about Danish culture, but I haven't found them yet. And so there is that love affair stage where you just are blindly copying, and then you then go through that process of sorting through.
Right.
Where you're like, oh, actually, that wasn't so great, and that was.
Right.
And what should I keep and what should I ditch?
Right.
So that's how culture is transmitted. This ties in all of the great stuff that Dan Coyle has on talent from the Talent Code on talent clusters, where you have people who succeed in a particular field who you feel are like you. So basketball stars or rappers for African Americans, female Russian tennis players. ABBA sparked a whole Swedish pop sensation thing, where now many of the pop songs are written by Swedes because, you know, they showed that it was possible,
sure,
for that group. South Korean female golfers, and on and on and on and on. So that's that. And then also talking about genius myths, where genius myths are what happens is someone like Steve Jobs or Thomas Edison creates a myth about themselves, this big public persona. But what happens is that people don't understand that that image is photoshopped and that that's not actually something that you can copy. And what they're doing is they're a figurehead for all sorts of other people who are doing lots of work. Mm-hmm. Somebody tweeted me today, was talking about Newton and Einstein. And they said, you know, why do we not have a Newton and Einstein now? And the reason why, and they said, you know, were they just figureheads for a whole group of people? And that was exactly the conversation that I had with Spiros about how Einstein was this figurehead for a large movement of physicists that was happening.
That's right.
But in order to sell that, you couldn't sell, oh, here's a thousand...
He was very media savvy, and he was also very good at simplifying complex ideas.
Well, and he was also sort of forced into that role by Arthur Eddington. He didn't really want to.
Oh, he didn't?
He hated it.
Great communicator.
And yeah, and he said that, you know, there's this quote that we use in the Straight A Conspiracy about how Einstein said the difference between the public perception of me and the reality has become so different that it's become grotesque.
Yeah, I believe it.
So he didn't particularly even like that role, but you know, it was very much the same thing as Martin Luther King, who was thrust in this role of being the public figurehead. And you know, there's that celebrity tension of, oh, I'm the public face of this, but then there's me as a person, and I'm held to these standards that are just unrealistic. So anyway, so there's all of that. The next video is Descartes' error, the writer and the elephant, just saying that thinking and feeling are always linked.
Right.
And so the question is, what? How is your the feelings you've picked up from your culture driving your thinking without you even
and
realizing?
And the idea that when we have this idea that our emotions are driving us only when we're in a heightened state, when in fact that's not true. We can be in a very calm state, but our emotions are still driving us.
Always.
Yes, always.
And crucially, it's I think the more dangerous is when you're not in a heightened state and your feelings are still driving your thinking. That's your real cultural blind spots because you don't even realize the ways in which things that you've picked up from your family are driving how you interpret and make sense of situations. So the next video is the Dunbar number, social intelligence. You know, and social intelligence is really a humanity's superpower. And a lot of what we talk about here is grooming and gossip. So part of what Dunbar points out is that if you have a troop of baboons, whatever.
Or baboons.
Or baboons.
I'm American.
You are American.
I'm an American guy. Own guns. Keep going.
But they may have 20 individuals, and those 20 individuals can groom each other physically.
Yeah.
But when you have a human tribe of 150, you can't physically groom 150 people. You would spend all day grooming. So we evolved gossip and language to be able to groom each other without having to
social cohesion.
That's right.
And keeps people in line.
And keeps people in line.
And there is value to that.
There is value to
that. She's a slut. Well, that probably evolved because when you sleep with a lot of people, you get diseases.
Oh, he's just
he's a
player.
Yeah.
He's a cad.
Yeah.
So that gossip is, but it's a huge part of who we are. Yeah. And crucially, it gets away from these enlightenment notions that humanity's superpower is reason. Humanity's superpower is social intelligence.
We should strive for reason. For the
well, it
part.
Also depends on what you mean by reason, which is, I think, a super important question.
That's
and
true.
Very often people confuse.
My definition of reason is being responsible to the evidence. Is being able to the empirical evidence and being able to sort of always be willing to be influenced by that which you can measure, right? That which wins the day.
It's
the idea that
reasonable.
You can prove along independent lines of inquiry and reach the same conclusion.
Yep,
that's important.
It's being reasonable and allowing your mind to be changed. But I crucially think, and this is part of John Haidt's point. Is that individual reason is actually pretty flawed.
It's
only when you have the wisdom of crowds, because what ends up happening is if you're trying to reason solo, you're in trouble because you have blind spots that you don't see.
Yeah.
And so it's really, I think, reason is something that emerges from...
I swear to God, man, it's why they always say actors need directors. I don't care if you're Meryl Streep or Daniel Day-Lewis, you need a director. You're not going to be able to see certain things about the way you're doing it. And you need a third eye. We call it a third eye.
And that's why science is...
Acting talk, guys.
Super relatable analogy. By the way, when I did this, I had lunch with Spiros before. We had a three-hour lunch, and then we had a two-hour podcast. But before the two-hour podcast and the three-hour lunch, I took Spiros through all of these videos. He's also very excited about it, because obviously being a Greek guy who lives in America and then was in the world of math and then moved into the world of physics, he understands how much culture matters at each of those switches. Yeah. So he loves this.
Good.
And by the way, he may be in these videos in a Speedo.
I can't wait to be in the video.
And you're going to be in the video.
Yeah.
But as I was taking Spiros through all of these things, I would explain something like the Dunbar number, and he'd be like, he'd turn to the other quantum physicist that he brought along, and he goes, "Oh, that's just like this thing in quantum physics." It's amazing.
That's
you
awesome.
Make things relatable that's by relating awesome. Them to quantum physics, because that's the frame of reference you know best.
Right.
So you relate it to acting. Spiros relates it to quantum physics. I relate it to tutoring. Like that's how I understand everything. So yes, you have gossip. Humanity's superpower is its social intelligence, and understanding rationalizing versus reasonableness.
Right. Is that the end?
Oh, no, no.
Oh, okay.
So then, quickly, these things we can quickly go through. So the next one is optimism and pessimism. Everybody has optimism and pessimism,
right.
But different cultures massively overfavor one or the other, like Russia and America, or lawyers versus actors.
Yep.
The next one is atomism and holism. Again, two mindsets that everybody has.
We've touched on that.
But some people overfavor one or the other. Honor versus dignity cultures. Mm-hmm. Pro-life, pro choice, that thing that I did in a Joe Rogan where I go through guns
dignity
and abortion.
Dignity cultures being sort of the politically correct, the progressive left that I'm always
wasps.
Having problems with.
Weird, as they're known in the scientific literature. Western, educated, industrialized, rich, and democratic.
Love it.
Yeah.
Drive me up a wall. They're important. I like being around them, but they piss me off at the same time.
That is so not true.
And they annoy
me. Brian, when you...
I just don't like when they're not responsive to biology and they're prudes. They're such prudes. They're so sexless. I am so sick. Every time I'm around progressive vegan liberals or liberals in general, they're so sexless. Like, they don't want to... Nobody fucks. Or if they do, they lie. I'm sorry, man. It's like they deny the animal and I always feel like I'm like an animal among I feel like an ape. I feel like a chimp, a male rogue chimp or something. I just
Brian, can
it
we
drives
talk about-
me up a wall. It's like, hey bro, do a push up. I don't want to get into it because I'm going to sound really stereotypical and bro like, but maybe that's part of me. Maybe it's all the fast twitch muscle talking.
Yeah, and that I mean that does cloud the. Thinking, but
stop acting like fidelity is so easy for you, and stop acting like you're so like in tune with your girl, and stop acting like you're so like you're just so amorphous with your sexuality. You just your general like
welcome to Brian's like fast thinking.
carry the child in one of those dumb Bjorns on your foot. Every time I see a dude who carries his own child in a Bjorn in the front of his body, I'm like, I'm not friends with you fucking anymore. And I know I'm being ridiculous and I'm being dramatic.
Have you seen Lilyhammer by the way?
No, but I find it all suspect.
Amazing.
All right, keep going. I'm talking too
anyway,
much.
But you should see Lilyhammer because it's Steve Van Zandt, and he's a mob guy, and he goes into witness protection in Lilyhammer, Norway.
Right.
And it's amazing
because
it's literally everything that you're saying, where you take this guy from New York who's in the mob, and suddenly he has to live in this super progressive,
super egalitarian world, which I'm sure I would love, but I'd be annoyed at it at the same time.
So anyway, but regardless, I think that little... spiel is a great example of why we need to understand these cultural differences.
I'm a fast thinker. Yeah.
No, but we all are. I think that's the key thing is that we need to understand each other so that we can then, understand what are the positives and what are the negatives.
Right.
So the next one is the evolution of racism, which we just went through before
Thomas
this podcast. Or no, 1493, Charles C. Mann.
Oh, right, with malaria and
malaria.
How black people had... a sickle cell, sort of a gene variant where they were more resistant to malaria. And when malaria was brought to the New World, the Native Americans didn't make effective slaves because they died. And it turned out that black slaves were a better return on your investment, which is why you'd spend all that time, money, getting them into ships and sending them across the Atlantic. Can't think of anything worse.
Well, wow. And crucially, the system evolved in the same way as we talked about putting wood ash in your corn or, leaching cyanide out of your cassava.
Yeah.
This system evolved over hundreds of years.
Yeah.
So there's It's adaptive to a particular environment. But, of course, we've now eliminated not only malaria from the southern United States, we've also eliminated slavery.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But the belief system that evolved to that environment still persists. Mm-hmm. And crucially, if you want to actually fix these things, then we have to start to all become much more emotionally aware. Mm-hmm. Racism is a feeling. And Dave Colon, who I mentioned earlier, has this great thing where he talks about how, you know, anybody who's really racist, what that really means is they love their dad a lot. Because he says racism does literally nothing for your life. It's not going to make you more employable. It's not going to make you have better relationships. It's not going to make you better able to move around the world in a globalized civilization. So literally the only reason is that your dad was racist and you're so bad at admitting that there might be problems with your dad's thinking that you just are holding on to this
It's fantastic.
So there's that, and then the next one is Everything in Black, Rednecks, White Liberals.
Yep, Tom Sowell's work.
And so basically
culture.
Showing we should, instead of talking about black versus white, we should be talking about there are rednecks,
yep.
black rednecks, and white rednecks,
yep.
and then there are liberals.
Yep.
The next one is Log and Splinter,
yep.
you know, this idea from the Bible. It's easier to see the log in, the splinter in your brother's eye than the log in
and
your
Katie
own.
And Katie O'Brien saying that we're all fundamentalists in one
thing.
In some
way.
And that's homework for everybody listening. What are you a fundamentalist in? Religion, nutrition, libertarian thinking, progressive left thinking, is egalitarian, is equality your fundamentalist belief? It's a really good exercise.
So that's good. The next one. And then really sort of breaking down that fundamentalism is really about this sort of invasion of the body snatchers mm-hmm. reaction, mm-hmm. where there's a freaking out that's happening around the world because we're suddenly being shoved together, all these cultures,
yep.
and we're seeing all sorts of things that upset us.
And you get these concepts like economic nationalism, and thank you, Steve Bannon, and all that stuff.
And the 70 gender pronouns. And
oh, that's great.
All of the level.
All of us trying to live together.
All of us trying to live together, and all sorts of insanity.
And being careful how we speak the way the polls did, because we're all inside.
Right. So then the next one is the jobocalypse and technology and how that's changing the environment. And because we now understand that your culture is adapted to your environment, that means that you have to constantly be updating your cultural software to fit this new environment.
Okay.
And so that's the learn, unlearn, and relearn. Always put the white belt on.
Love
and
it.
So there's lots of fun stuff there. The sort of the good historical analogy is the dueling culture,
mm-hmm.
how the dueling culture, you know, you would fight to first blood. And fighting to first blood with swords is one thing, but when the gun is introduced, now the technology has changed, and fighting to first blood is a much deadlier affair. And so it takes time for the cultural intuitions to catch up.
Right.
And obviously, Alexander Hamilton didn't catch up, so he died. And then yeah. The final video is this great analogy from Katie O'Brien that what we're living through right now is humanity's first family dinner. So we've all been off in our little corners of the world, and now we're all being shoved together at one big table. And we're like, who are these people? What do they believe? They're so crazy. I just don't want to talk to them. And I'm just going to sit and focus on my pudding
yep.
so I don't have to talk to these people.
Yep.
And you really can't.
Well done, Katie.
Yeah. I mean, she does good work. She does
yep.
good work. You really can't avoid being a global citizen. We all are global citizens now. And the question is, you know, how do we start a more productive conversation? And one of the things that we really want to do is get people giving their own cultural confessions. And you can go to mixedmentalarts.co, and people have started giving their cultural confessions where they talk about
Jesus.
Their different cultures.
We're creating a serious forum of thought.
Yep. And there's really, really great, there's some really great ones on there. I'm a big fan of Gary Robbins, who's a British guy, and having gone to boarding school in England for 10 years, I really appreciated this. And his is 9 words. It's the British
Tell us
wit.
What the 9 words are.
The 9 words are snide British quips. It's not charisma. It's emotional cowardice. And I can tell you that that is the nature of upper class twits. And so there's that one. And then Kate Fogarty, who I mentioned earlier, did a great one, which is all about her being secretly Swedish. So even though she has this amazingly Irish name, Fogarty, it doesn't get much more Irish than that. She's Swedish, and that's because that's sets of values that have been passed down for generations and generations, and that she picked up from her grandmother.
Excellent.
I think that's the interesting thing is Brian has done his 23andMe genetic profile,
yeah,
but there's also your cultural profile,
yeah,
and where did that come from?
Yeah.
I think a lot of us are certainly Brian and I, and a lot of the people that I've connected with so far on Mixed Mental Arts. There are a lot of cultural mutts out there, and
yeah,
that's a big part of the reason why, you know, people like Spiros get this and get that it matters so much. Because when you've moved between enough cultures, then you understand how powerfully culture shapes our own thinking. And to your point, that if we had been born in another culture, we would be like that.
Ladies and gentlemen, well put, Hunter Motz, and we are very excited to move forward on this, and we're going to start bringing you more thinkers, more books, more ideas, and we will rehash and remind periodically, as we did tonight, what we've learned so far. Hunter, another great podcast. Good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Mixed Mental Arts with Brian Callen and Hunter Motz. For more information and past episodes, please visit briancallen.com and mixedmentalarts.club. Also, be sure to follow the show on Twitter @MixedMentalArts. Until next time, bye-bye.